Before I get started today, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and TMS coach based in Los Angeles. You can hear her entire story in episode 188 back in 2021. If you're not familiar with Jeannie, let me introduce her. She used to be a burnt out high school teacher and struggled for 16 years with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, anxiety, depression, digestion issues, before healing herself completely and leaving that dead-end job. Simply put, she gets it, especially the frustration and overwhelm of not knowing the next steps. And that's why she's by your side the entire time. Her one-on-one coaching program, she's checking in between calls, offering support and accountability through the week so that you can be successful. You're not doing this alone anymore. It's the new year. It's time. I encourage you to book a free introductory call to learn more about her one-on-one coaching program right away. Go to jeanniecolwin.com. That's JeannieColwin.com to book your free call. And while you're on the website, check out the impressive testimonials page to see her clients' transformations firsthand. Welcome back to the show. It is January the 25th. As you hear this, this is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. I haven't thanked the patrons of the show in a long time. If you want to support the show, join 25 of the show's biggest supporters by going to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I want to make sure I give a big shout out. Gosh, the first name here is it? I think it's Carrie, but they spelled the name M-I-C-A-R-R-I-G-G. But the email looks like it says Carrie. So please email me and let me know pronunciation. And then Mary, Teresa, Albert, Jeff, Julie, Deborah, Daniel, Kirk, Emily, Elise, Dominic, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Christina, Julie, Brian, Sarah, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support this podcast every single week, month, year. Means the world, honestly. Happy to have you here and so grateful for you. Today's episode, I was on the TMS Roundtable with Dr. Tova Goldfein, as you're listening to this yesterday, but it was me, my buddy Brad Gutting, who's been on the show a couple of times, and we were talking about the Facebook group that we run, TMS-the-mind-body-syndrome, and it's an hour 20, I think, so it's a longer listen, but hey, throw it on 1.5 times speed, go take a nice walk. If you walk 2 miles, it should take you between 35 and 45 minutes, and that'll put you just about to the end of the episode, so it's really kind of perfect if you do it at that 1.5 speed. But yeah, I wasn't actually even planning on airing this, but I thought that it went really well. And we had said things that I hadn't been thinking about in a long time. So without further ado, here is Dr. Tova Goldfein, Brad Gutting, and myself from the TMS Roundtable. Check them out on Facebook, and I will link it in the show notes if you want to check out more.
I am privileged. See, like there's a Dr. Clark and there's a Dr. Schechter, but then there's Eddie and Brad. So as far as I'm concerned, I feel like, you know, I love it. I've been trying to get you guys in my studio. I was telling Brad, I would email, I would WhatsApp, and I thought, I'm not taking this personal. Okay, these guys are busy. This is my life, not their life. And finally, I got you guys, and we scheduled, and it was done. So for persistence, for patience, for trust in the universe, I'm so happy to be here with Brad Gutting and Eddie Lindenstein. My name is Dr. Tova Goldfein. This is TMS Roundtable. And we have been streaming live for since the beginning of COVID. I want to put something else up on the screen. Hold on. We've been streaming live since the beginning of COVID, which is, who cares, 4 years ago or something. But anyway, we have close to over 200 broadcasts. And I am privileged to be in this place and with my amateur broadcasting, I'm just happy to be here and really, really, really grateful for your time and for your lunch hour to be having lunch with me and the people in the studio who may come live. If not, we will be on YouTube for the rest of our lives. You'll be on YouTube. But anyway, enough about me. Brad and Eddie, I want to know how you guys met. It's a little bit of a love story.
So, how did we meet? This goes back to, I want to say, 2018, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, maybe a little before that. I mean, my recollection, probably similar to yours, is I think we probably just met in a TMS group on Facebook. And Scotty, what's up, Scotty? I think we just met in a TMS group on Facebook. And I think we just sort of had like similar interests. And I think there was probably lifting, and we're both oozing machismo, but then realized that we're in fact, at least at the time, I don't think we're exactly 10 or 15 miles apart anymore. I think it's a little bit more now, but we're still pretty close.
So you're both in Seattle.
Yeah. I moved further south. So I'm in the Georgetown area of Seattle. Okay. So what happened specifically was, I think it was 2018. I discovered TMS in 2014, recovered from, you know, symptoms pretty quickly. And then 2018, I had a relapse. I keep calling it a relapse. I don't know what the right terminology for it is, but
a flare up.
I had very bad back pain return after lifting in the gym, and it hurt a lot, and I was upset, and I got on the internet, and I started looking around, and I came across a Facebook group, which is the group that we now handle, and I started posting quite a bit, and encountered Eddie, who was posting quite a bit as well, and we found that we were both in Seattle. And
was it called the mind body syndrome?
Yeah, I think it's always had the same name. Eventually, Eddie took over as the admin, and then I kind of became a co-moderator pursuant to that. Now, the history of this group is that it was originally founded by Steve Ozanich, and then Steve left. And I got curious a couple of years ago as to why Steve left, because I had reached a point of some amount of frustration with what I saw happening in the group, which was a lot of focus on symptoms and not enough focus on emotions. And
so Let me ask you a question. And I do interrupt, and sometimes people don't like it, but I kind of want to just ask you, how do people know? Does it say it in the, like, you know, when you say about, do people know? Maybe it could say something like, please, this page is for solutions.
We can't speak for anybody that was a member before we started. I think when we started, it was probably 2,000 people, and I don't know what the current count is, but I think it's probably about double that. And we added screening questions to make sure that, hey, basically, what book have you read? Do you understand the symptom imperative? And there's a third one, and they have to say it back. And I don't admit anybody that doesn't have something, even if it could be books I've never heard of, but then I can Google, and yes, they might be in a different language or something like that.
Yeah.
But they're on the right path. And I don't admit anybody that doesn't have that, or I'll admit people that maybe don't answer the questions, but it'll tell us if like they're a referral or came from like another group member invited them. But then when people show up, you know, it's all hell can break loose too. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's so Ozanich's point to me was that he started the group, you know, as one does, and then kind of hit a point of frustration with the tendency to focus explicitly on symptoms and not necessarily embrace what TMS is all about. And I'm with him on this. And his point to me, just to go ahead and speak for Steve, which isn't quite fair, but I'll do it anyway. His point to me was that like support groups are bad because people just sort of get into the cycle of being in a support group and not necessarily focusing on moving on. And he pointed out, he's like, you know, most people find TMS, they get past the pain, and then they never want to have to really think about it again. And they kind of go off. And that's true. That is the ultimate approach, is that ideally, if you've got chronic conditions and you find TMS and you resolve those chronic conditions, big part of this is moving on with your life and sitting around in a group and constantly seeking out advice is probably, or it is definitely an indication that you're resisting something, and it would be good if you stopped.
Well, you're full of fear. You're full of fear, and you want some immediate gratification that you're going to be okay.
Yeah. And my point, because when I responded to Steve with this, I said, I was like, I get that, and I think that you're 100% right. I was like, but also in this era of internet and the ability to create groups, is that a group is invariably going to come into existence. People are going to say, it's like, okay, I want to formulate a group around this topic, and that's going to happen. So knowing that, I was like, okay, we've got this group. I want this group to be different and not just be about talking about the thing all the time, and use it as a place to sort of remind you that, well, you know, your time is really best spent elsewhere. And the principles of TMS is that you need to experience your emotions, acknowledge that the emotions that you've been repressing have manifested as any number of physical symptoms. Those symptoms are irrelevant. You need to focus on your feelings, experience them, and move on. Simple as that.
Wow.
That's it. That's it. Now, getting people to accept the connection between I have repressed emotions and they manifest as physical pain. To a certain degree, if you're in this group, you are more or less saying that you believe that that is at least possible, and you understand that such things can be the case. You've read the books. You have to have read at least a book, please. And any of those books that we want you to have read, more get into that connection between emotions and the physical manifestations of them.
So I think what you're saying, and Eddie's, see, let you agree or disagree, is that if people would focus on the solution, their feelings, and not the symptoms, they probably would get better faster. And you're saying the page can encourage them in a discouraging way to stay involved in the symptoms because they're developing these. So I hear you. And I'm kind of on both sides and trying to figure out a way. What if you changed the parameters and been like, no symptom talking? We're kicking you off. Like, you might.
We've tried that. we've tried that at various times.
You also have the people in your best interest. It's like, we're helping you. We're helping you. We're supporting you by asking you not to talk about symptoms. So what if there was a red flag thrown more? I mean, again, because the place is not a place. It's not a therapy page. It's a place to get solutions.
Well, let's start off. Let's define what a solution is in this case.
Eddie, so, you're being kind of quiet.
I'm just listening. Yeah, I would do a lot more policing years ago of the page in itself, and then, you know, that does get tiresome. So occasionally popping in and having it function far more just as like a peer support, I actually think is more powerful than, you know,
yeah.
Brad and I, we've got full-time jobs. We're also not doctors. We're, you know, we didn't write books. We just happen to understand this stuff pretty well. And so like the fact that like Brad opened, I can't remember if it was on, if it was during the stream or before it, but talking about experiencing symptoms again a week ago and then having them dissipate in a matter of a few hours. And I see that as very similar. I've told several stories on the podcast about, like, I refer to Brad as my TMS buddy, that I think that everybody should have a TMS buddy.
Absolutely. Where not where, 20 of them, just one.
Yeah, you need just one. And somebody that you can send a quick message to and get something. Like, there was a couple of years ago where I was lifting in the garage and had a jolt of pain in my lower back, and I couldn't move my legs. I couldn't get up. I was just in the fetal position. And I army
crawled. Yeah, you messaged me from the floor of your garage.
Yeah, I messaged him from the floor. I army crawled to the shelving that I had my phone on, sent him a text and say, here's what's going on. And I can't remember the exact reply, but it was something along the lines of like, what's going on in life? right now, as opposed to, oh, what did you lift or what did you do or how much weight was it or anything like that. When that's kind of like, you know, if you talk to really anybody else in your peripheral, the question will probably become, what were you lifting? How much was it? You know, that kind of stuff. And I went back and re-listened to a chapter of healing back pain a couple of weeks ago. And there was, I forgot exactly how he worded it, but the audible version of healing back pain is so great because Sarno's the one that's doing it.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's on YouTube, by the way.
Okay, so it was It was the only of the four that he did the audible for. The other ones are these other guys, and it just hits completely different when it's coming from him. But he was talking about basically like what's the max capacity for somebody to lift, and reiterating that if you can lift it, it's not too heavy, which is like such a simple thing. Like, because there's so many times, like people that I know, I got a text a couple days ago from somebody that I know, and they had said, hey, is it normal to not wear shoes at the gym? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And they said that they were lifting this weight and they're not wearing shoes. And they were talking about how dangerous they thought this was. And I was just like, I mean, stuff like that to me is very similar to the, if you lift that, you're going to hurt yourself. But it's like, well, like according to Sarno, like if you can lift it, then you can lift it. And that's really all there is to it. So
you also can lift it and hurt yourself and get better.
Yeah. And likely whatever amount of time that is significantly less than what most people would think.
Yeah. It's so what happened with me, I want to say it was about a week, maybe about a week and a half ago at this point, I was doing sets of five with squats, moderately heavy weight, however much you can lift for five reps. And I had done two sets. And then in the third set, I did two reps. And then on the third rep, I felt a twinge and I was like, ouch. And my first thought was like, oh no, I strained my back. And then I was like, yeah, this probably isn't a strain. It's probably TMS, which means I need to sort of sit down.
What was going on, Brad?
What was going on? Oh, you know, general life stuff, right? You know, girlfriend this, friends that, work this, family, blah, whatever. It's just nothing necessarily outside of the ordinary, but the tendency, I think, you know, the automatic default setting in the past before I figured this stuff out might have been to dismiss that and say, oh, it's not that, or it's not that big a deal. Instead, I said, it's like, okay, well, maybe this is a big deal. And maybe I am upset about this. Maybe there's a whole host of things I'm not really paying attention to. So how about I go and pay attention to those as opposed to paying attention to how my back feels? And I don't know, within hours, a day, it's fine. It's fine. Didn't matter because I wasn't injured. I didn't strain my back. I didn't do anything. I didn't slip a disc or whatever. I don't even know what the various rationalizations that exist anymore are because I don't think in those terms. Now, to be fair, this is a mindset shift that has been going on for, in my case, it's almost 10 years. I discovered TMS, I want to say August, September timeframe of 2014. So this, I'm in my 10th year of thinking about this stuff.
Happy anniversary. So,
yeah. It's pretty exciting. Big milestone, right?
Let me ask you a very personal question. I'm going to put you guys on the spot, but you don't have to answer it. Would you have either of you been at one point in your TMS career or your chapter been like, I got to go on this Facebook page because I got to get information whether this is TMS. I got to feed it if someone else got through this. Like, you can relate to that consciousness of these people who are.
Yeah, that's how I found the group.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I found the group.
Let's say something about that. Let's talk to the people that are on the page asking about things, wanting an answer, and like talk about like the fear that you might have went through and you want guarantee, you want immediate gratification. You want to know that you're going to be okay.
Yeah. I mean, certainly that's when I discovered the group, if that was 2018, so that was almost really 6 years ago at this point. Right. I came to the group definitely confused. And so there is that, I could have gone down. There are a couple of ways that this path could have gone down, that it could have worked out. I could have constantly been asking, like, okay, here's a very, very detailed description of the symptoms I've got. Do you think it's TMS? You know, and I was probably there at first. But I think what was useful is that the responses that I got, I don't remember the original like exact wording necessarily, but it was like, yes, it's TMS and you need to stop overthinking it. You know, and so that's like the ideal model for the group right now is that you go in there and the group is sort of, in totality, a reminder that like, yes, it's TMS. That's like the simplest thing. I had a post some years ago where I just said, yes, comma, it's TMS, period. That's it.
And then, you know, I'm blanking on his name right now, created Crushing Doubt because doubt is a big trigger.
Yeah, doubt is a big trigger, and there's all sorts of reasons why doubt exists. I think that, you know, when you're repressing feelings, it's because you don't want to feel them, and so you will. Thinking is a key way of is a great mechanism for repression because thinking is a way to rationalize away that which you do not want to experience. And it's, I think Ozanich has said, and probably others have said, thinking blocks feeling.
Wow. Yeah. And thinking pulls you away from your feelings. Yeah. Exactly. And Eddie, I remember Eddie's story is very detailed about going on and on and on. And then you went to that doctor, that medical doctor who with your opinion, and she sort of said something to you that they clicked for you. So where were you at in this chapter of like, is it TMS? Is it real? Am I, it's in my mind. Maybe it's physical. Like, talk a little bit about that. Cause you were there where these people were at.
So I'm frantically, you got to give me like 30 more seconds. I'm frantically scrolling to the bottom of my post history in any of these TMS groups to see what was the first thing I ever said.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at the date on it and it looks like it would have been about a week or so after I found Sarno's book. Cause I don't recall being somebody that came into one of those and posted. I think for me, it was very quick. It was like, I only remember these dates because my wife's birthday is June 29th. And I found the book the day after her birthday on June 30th. And this would have been in 2017. I was scrolling on Amazon and that doctor that you're talking about, I think I met with her a month or two prior to that. But it took a couple of months and it was like, I had a suggested purchase on Amazon or I was searching for like mobility tools or something on the website on Amazon. And, a suggested purchase for me was, Sarno's book. And that's what I went and read. So hold on. This is a very long post. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but no, I can't. This is from July 7th of 2017. I'm kind of giving like a little bit of my history and all of the things that I, you know, did in terms of the various surgeries or whatevers that I had had. And here, I'll start at the doctor part. Can I have 4 minutes of the floor?
Please take
as much as you want, man.
Okay. So I talked about the things that I did, which was, I saw MDs, I got a cervical spine MRI, an X-ray, thoracic outlet syndrome, nerve block, 20 chiro visits, 20 massages, 8 Rolfing sessions, physiatrist, sports doctor, orthopedist, neurologist, spine doctors, 10 PTs, fascial strain, counter strain, craniosacral therapy. And I said, I then went and saw the head physician at the University of Washington Huskies to inquire about nerve entrapments. She examined me and noted the substantially increased muscle tone up and down my back. The next thing she asked me was how my stress level was. I fought this and kept saying it was a structural problem, but she kept countering with this thought of stress and anxiety. She gave me, she told me that muscle relaxers would give me no relief. And she sent me to see a massage therapist and recommended a sports psychologist. I said, I never put two and two together as I don't think of myself as a stressed out person. I then went and traveled to Montana, still seeking a structural problem. The nerve doctor there said that I had really inconsistent symptoms, but he went and did I had a procedure done on my neck there with him.
EMG?
What's that?
whatever, it's not important, a muscle test. And it's called an EMG where they check the muscles.
Oh, I was beyond that. He did a, he took a, I forgot what it's called. It's called a,
Not important.
It is important because it was sort of the, it was such vivid imagery where I was up on a, he had an ultrasound on my neck and he was taking a long, like a 6 or 7 inch needle. And he was running it into my neck to separate the fascial tissue.
Oh my God. I've never heard of that.
That was the procedure that I was doing.
Yeah, I think it's worth getting into those details because it can, like, these the power of myth and narrative is so powerful, and like the details of like, yeah, it's a syringe that went into my facial tissues and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the Sarno part. So I said I picked up Dr. Sarno's book, and it was like reading a journal of my life from the previous year. Knee tendonitis, sciatica, the constant back pain. I think of myself as a really good husband and a great dad to my 3-year-old. But certainly over the last few months, I've had moments where I get incredibly frustrated. It isn't like me at all. I'd research on my phone different injuries right when I woke up and right when I went to bed. I'd get mad that I stopped. I stopped riding my motorcycle, lifting weights, doing CrossFit, essentially anything physical I did before this. I said stop completely. And back in 2012, I lost about 100 pounds as I wanted something new and healthy. Now I couldn't work out and this was crushing. I started internalizing what Sarno was saying and it fit perfectly. I'm highly data driven, so it's been a total mind fuck. I'm only a week removed from reading and my back pain is probably 85% gone.
Oh my God, unbelievable.
My upper trap pain is bad. Both sides are very sensitive to the touch, but the right side especially, where the mind drifts into thinking this is related to the long thoracic nerve entrapment that the doctor in Montana told me. I also think about how no other doctor found what Dr. Sarno found and that these little entrapments are common in most people. The day after I read Healing Back Pain, I jumped right back into CrossFit workouts. I rode my motorcycle for 2 hours and I started riding every day again and trying to be much more open about things that bother me. I discontinued all PT and acupuncture and I started psychotherapy the next week to try to figure out what I'm so mad about. When I sit in a chair, lay in a hammock and say to myself, this is your brain playing those tricks, my stiff traps feel like they're melting away. It's a really weird sensation. I had a tough time believing that I had some frail body that was susceptible to pain and dysfunction all the time. The TMS diagnosis is much more plausible. It's certainly a battle. And if you'd like, you're welcome to check out my blogs. And I listed my website at the time, which doesn't exist anymore.
Wow.
But that was my very first post. So I was pretty well, you know, bought in pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly.
So what about, I'm just going to ask a question because I know Susie is coming to visit. And Susie's got some more really ongoing, really chronic leg pains and leg weakness. And I want to say on the record, Susie, you know, because it's not back and neck, black and white, like it's chronic pain is not normal. And pain is processed in the brain. And I just want you guys to comment on that, that even if somebody has a structural problem, Gordon says and Tribuner says there are ways of desensitizing, becoming less sensitive, becoming dialing down there's a lot of different ways to address your body, even if it's not straight back and neck pain. So in answer to your question, Susan, maybe you want to answer it, Brad?
It's a really good point because one of the original books in this whole series of things was Healing Back Pain, My Upper Back Pain. So a focus on back pain, and that automatically is going to get people to focus on, okay, well, if it's not back pain, then it surely must be something else. Pretty understandable position to be taking. And it took a number of years for us to recognize that it's actually a lot of these other conditions is just a function of TMS, and that's not obvious from the beginning. So there is that factor. And then when it comes to structural issues, yes. In the TMS world, back pain.
Yes, true. You're right, Susie. And I think Sarno's book, as opposed to Schrubiner's, which I was looking at today, you know, he lists like at least 30 different things from tinnitus to IBS to migraines, where Sarno was just back and neck pain. And occasionally Sarno would talk about things too, but you're right. You're right, Susie. It is back and neck pain.
Yeah,
but
now, there's been a focus on that. And it's, you know, the longer you've been studying this stuff, the more you've come across like, okay, things like fibromyalgia is actually TMS, right?
100%.
Carpal tunnel is TMS, but most people don't know that, and there's no reason why they necessarily would. So, you know, when you consider that, then it's just like, okay, then you can see why people would come to a group and start posting more about like, okay, I've got these specific symptoms.
Well, and I'll my counter to that, I know that healing back pain is sort of like Sarno's, that's the most important book he ever wrote, and it's the most famous book he ever wrote, and it's the one that Stern would talk about, and it's the one that Larry David would talk about. But the mind-body prescription literally just, I mean, it goes section by section by section by section of literally anything that you can think of. Doesn't mean the wrist, the ankles, the knees, the everywhere. And then, Susie, I see anxiety and depression. And again, like, people might need some hand-holding to get to this point, but Schubiner has a book called Unlearning Your Pain, but he has
Unlearning Your Anxiety and Depression.
Like, he has a whole book about this. And if you go and you look at those two books, rip the covers off, and the books are virtually identical.
That's a good point. That's a good way of putting it. There is,
and just on the record, David Hanscom, who's a spinal deformity surgeon, you know, not anymore, is podcast and his blogs, and he writes in Psychology Today, are all about autoimmune, and that's where I like feel very confident talking about. And between David Clark, autoimmune is big. It's also, so as far as we're concerned, and even they'll say, even if your condition's not on this list, you can benefit from these skills and these tools and these insights, because it's about your relationship with your body. And that's what this show is about. Like, it's about you and your heart and you and your feelings and you and, you know, hating a body, loving a body. We cannot heal a body you hate. And, you know, and then we've got, you know, Sweetheart from, you just had a podcast with her talking about breathing, and then Scotty's talking about neuroplasticity. Like, this is mind body healing. This is, you know, and integrate with your medical doctor, go get your chemo, you know, but like, understand the mind body connection, and you will have a more quality life. This is just, you know, that's sort of my flag I'm flying.
You know, I went and saw a new, hopefully a new primary care provider about, let's see here, 2.5 hours ago. And she'd never seen me before. She's looking at my chart, you know, like my history of seeing different. And she's like, there's this period of time from end of 2015 until middle of 2017. She's like, what are the chronic health problems? Because it was literally like doctor, 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 like test, 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 diagnostic this, diagnosis that. And I was just, I'm pretty like, unless you're in this TMS-esque peripheral, I don't really talk about any of this stuff out loud. People want to ask me about it, that's fine, but I don't really talk about most of it out loud a lot of the time. But I had just told her that I'm like, yeah, you know, I had a lot of these problems. I had chronic back pain, but a lot of other chronic issues, including asthma and allergies and all these different things. And I said, I saw this doctor from UW, and she made the case to me about this being emotionally or stress rooted. And I said, it just really changed the way that I thought about a lot of this stuff. And I don't have the nagging constant athlete injuries that would occur on a very regular cadence, but I also don't have any prescriptions. I don't have, you know, anything of the sort anymore. And she was just kind of like, I need to look into that. So it's not like a, you know,
drop off a book to her office.
Yeah.
So your relationship with your, Eddie, your relationship with your entire body and any symptom you have a different relationship with it. You don't react, you respond. You're like, oh, what's that?
Yeah.
I want to address something.
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's fine. Susie mentioned it's a shame that it becomes inaccessible to many because folks concentrate on back pain. It's like, that's fair. I think that the heavy concentration on back pain because of its prevalence can sort of shut down people's conception of like what this could possibly be. That's sort of an unfortunate circumstance of the reality that like a lot of people have back pain. So that's where they're going to put their attention. And some of the other conditions tend not to be quite as common, but that doesn't make them any less valid. One thing I really want to get into, and I've mentioned this when Eddie and I have been on, I think the first podcast we did together, I mentioned it, which was that when I first kind of got into TMS, while I was able to resolve any of the physical symptoms by acknowledging what was going on when I talked about it to people, I would hedge when I was talking about like the repressed anger and the repressed rage, because it was like, I didn't feel comfortable with anger and rage. And I don't think anybody is really particularly comfortable with anger and rage, because it's not a very acceptable feeling emotion, because a lot of the thoughts and feelings that come along with it pretty intense and don't feel so great. And so it's easy to distance yourself from the fact that you have anger and rage. Totally understandable. I completely get why people do it, largely because I know that I did it. So it's like, you can read about this stuff and you can see the repeated mentions of like your physical pain is a function of repressed rage, and you can see that and you can buy into it and still not feel completely comfortable with the role that anger plays in this. But anger really is at the root of it, and developing a level of comfort with the fact that you get angry about stuff that may or may not have any rational basis is really critical to whatever's going on.
That's an amazing point. Eddie, it's a great point.
I think about, Tova, you had sent me some years ago a passage from Marvin Scorman, who was, I think he's retired now, but he was a big ISTDP guy.
Excellent. Good memory.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I copied the passage and I have it easily accessible. One of the things that he says is, we react to a break in a bond with anger. We have the impulse to lash out physically, verbally, or both in a hurtful way. If we were totally open to experiencing the feeling of anger and the impulse to lash out, we are looking at a momentary experience, which turns into another feeling, which turns into another feeling, which turns into another feeling. Emotions, including anger, have no substance. They just pass through us in a fluid way with total cognitive awareness and no anxiety. But when we repress the feelings, that's when we give them substance. So by resisting it, we actually invite them to persist, and we give them a lot more weight than they otherwise need to have.
Wow.
But in order to get to that point where things can pass through you have to say, yes, I'm enraged, and that's okay. That's not easy. It's just not easy. And I think what we sometimes subtly, sometimes more directly with the group, what we want to see is, we want to see people saying like, I am fucking furious about this. And that's a big leap. That's a huge leap for anybody to make.
Mm-hmm. Or you can be angry, rageful, and it not hurt your body. We're not telling you not to have feelings.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, exactly yeah. that. Exactly that. So we're not telling you.
Yeah.
There can be this notion, I think what can rapidly happen is like, oh, okay, well, I need to make anger go away. Like, well... yeah, but that doesn't mean don't feel it and don't have it. I think what Scorman was getting at is that when you're comfortable with experiencing it and acknowledging it for what it is, you make it a lot easier to pass through.
Beautiful.
But restricting yourself from being able to feel it or experience it, that's when it starts to gain substance. And that's really, really hard. That's really, really, really difficult.
I think a hang up that some people may have with that is sort of thinking that if I have any sort of an admittance to anger or to rage or whatever, that it means that I'm an angry or a rageful person, or that people should be. And a phrase that I found myself using a lot with my highly combative daughter sometimes, especially in the last couple of weeks, I noticed that a phrase that I'm saying to them a lot is, you did a bad thing, you're not a bad person. And And that's like a big part of this too, in my mind, is like, hey, Brad, just because you're angry or that you thought misfortunes of somebody or whatever, you're angry about a situation, doesn't make you a bad person.
Right.
But I think that that's really difficult for people to understand, is that even if you have a thought or a bad thought or a bad emotion or a bad feeling about something, that's not the, people are so absolute. And so, and I am too, like, that's one of my, that's a trait of mine, is being absolute even when I don't want to be.
She's a little bit like you.
Yeah, no, exactly. Totally. What, I mean, one of them looks, you, and we both have long hair. We look identical, same color eyes. But yeah, it's absolutely the thing, you know, like, and part of the issue too, is I think the more maybe that people resist that and sort of dig their heels into the concept, and it kind of makes them even angrier, but like a low key anger that's not productive in any way. It's just sort of feeding this flame on the inside. And you kind of end up at this, Steve Ozanich in his book has this great illustration of, I think it's the, God, what is it? I think it's the id and the ego sort of doing battle, and the superego is like a referee. That's kind of the conflict that you're, when I had first discovered a lot of this stuff, I started thinking of the place where symptoms exist is at the conflict between the two personalities. Like that's what I, yeah. That was sort of the nucleus of what I thought about this stuff.
Yeah. A couple good points in the chat. Lena notes that anger can be expressed positively for example, setting boundaries. Yeah, that's a good one. Not to go all Brené Brown.
Lena healed herself from ankylosing spondylitis.
Oh, wow. One of those things that like, can really, really feel like it's like
Norway, Sweden. Amazing story. And Debbie Bliss is here. She's in her 70s and a marathon runner.
She is. She was on the show recently. Hey, Deb. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And,
The point about anger and boundaries is a really good one, because like, not to go all Brené Brown here, but one thing that Brené Brown discovered about people who are like habitually compassionate and just like very, very good at being compassionate is that the one common thread that they all share is that they have boundaries of steel. And anger is often in response to boundaries being violated. So using them to set boundaries and to maintain boundaries is really key. So anger is not like this terrible thing that should never exist. I think that it is a signal, is a useful signal, and getting really, really, really comfortable with it is really good. But you know, as Deb is pointing out, it takes a lot of work to recognize that. In the first place, and then, as you know, she also points out, it's difficult to truly feel it, you know, because feeling it doesn't feel particularly comfortable. So,
and then the you know, the aftermath of that is not to feel guilty about what.
Oh my
feel.
God! Oh yeah, or yeah, you know, or feel deep shame about it either. You know, that the self-acceptance that goes into this is like this. That's the really kind of lifelong journey of this is
that I say it in every show that Michael Glinsky was going to name the movie All the Acceptance, but he knew it wouldn't sell in the box office, so he called it
Nicole Sachs's prescription has evolved over the years. When I first met her, it was the 20 minutes of journal speak, and then where you may spend 20 minutes ripping everybody you know from pillar to post in the worst possible ways. But then it became 20 minutes of journal speak and then 10 minutes of a like forgiveness session for yourself for everything you just said and thought about too. Which I think is interesting because And again, that goes even further into this, your thoughts and feelings and things that are coming to mind does not totally define who you are. There's nothing definitive about it. There's fluidity involved, but because we are so rigid as humans, that's sort of why maybe a little bit of compassion for yourself is a necessity.
Yeah. And I think that's really key. One thing that Ozanich just talked about is that, you know, there is, at a lot of the core of the rage that you might feel is a disparity between who you think you are and maybe who you actually are. And difficulty seeing your true self can be a real epiphany. You know, yeah. It's just like one thing that I've talked about in the past is that, like, I had to reconcile the fact that it's like, well, I like to think I'm one way and I like to think I'm one person, but a lot of my actions might demonstrate otherwise. If I'm resisting that, if I'm resisting that reality, then I'm more likely to persist on the road that I'm at. So if I were to, you know, it's like what they any good therapist will tell you is that, like, you know, acceptance is necessary for true change to occur. And what we are basically telling you is that, like, in order to get past chronic physical symptoms, is that you do have to change. You have to change your mindset. You have to change the way you think about things, the way you react.
Yeah, I mean, let's call it, you have to evolve. I don't know if you, like, we have to accept who we are, what our personality traits are, who we are, our traumas, our dramas, and evolve, you know, like, whether it's what Dispenza says, which is breaking the habit of being yourself. If the habit's not working, I mean, if it's working, keep it. If it's serving you, keep it. But also, can you love the part of you that you don't like?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you can.
Brad, can you love the part of you that you don't like?
I mean, I think I've gotten better about it. You know, I think I've gotten better about it. This has been something that you don't just do this the one time, I guess. You know, it's like you have the confrontation with the difficult thing, and then you recognize that, like, well, this is probably going to happen again. You know,
there's a pattern. We all have patterns. I mean,
yeah, we've all got patterns in life. If you're living, I think, you know, a great foundational concept behind TMS is resume living normally. And that first means having a conception of what it means to live normally and not avoiding that. And if you are living normally, you are going to come across, you're going to deal with things that are unpleasant, that are difficult, that are unpredictable, that are unsettling, that are going to, despite your best efforts, lead to reaction that, you know, your more conscious mind may not have done. That's just what it is. TMS, you know, recovering from TMS means getting very, very comfortable with, like, living a normal life, being alive, living, not hiding away. And there are all sorts of evasive things that we can do. You know, chronic pain in a lot of ways is like the most superficial version of evading real life, because what can happen is that people can, you can move on from the chronic pain, but then you could get involved with a lot of other things that are distractive in a different way. That's what I try and avoid, is I try and avoid just pure escapism. And the urge to just escape difficulty is often.
Well, why is it hard, Brad and Eddie? I mean, you guys are, you know, men, and I'm not differentiating, but why is it? Because some people, they get out of the pain and they have got to deal with their feelings, and they're like, I think I want the pain back.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I understand.
why is it hard for difficult or new or scary to, like, I call, you know, being naked with your clothes on, you know, being with your feelings, hanging out with the loneliness, sitting with the shame, having coffee with your fear.
Well, you guys talk without, about that a little bit? Without any empirical evidence here or any research on it, this is just my gut take. But I think that the concept of being able to grasp whatever this is that we're talking about, I think is kind of misunderstood, and that maybe the assumption for manly men with long hair and tattoos and ride motorcycles and lift weights and do all that is probably more along the lines of, hey, if I buy into this stuff and I get more in tune with my emotions, that it means that I need to sit in the corner and cry a lot. I think that that's maybe the, like, that's the immediate thought. And yeah, that does sound like a bunch of BS. I'd probably rather have a backache than have to sit in the corner. And, like, I think that there is just sort of this notion that the concept of being in tune with emotions, or even trying to feel them, is a very outward act, or a very intentional act, when I actually think that it's totally the opposite. I can't remember where I read it, but there was something that I read once about the ability and the act of feeling emotions, actually feeling emotions, you should be able to sit there in a room and nobody even know what's going on. Like you should be able to do this entirely, because really it's just getting in tune with how you're feeling on the inside. And that's really all that there is to it. And I think it's like making a mountain out of a molehill, that there's just more involved than there really needs to be. And that's the biggest part of the problem. And I'll say, for me personally, the reason that I'm okay with it, and I didn't know this in the very beginning, but probably the biggest reason that I'm okay with it selfishly is that it has afforded me the opportunity to be not reckless, but like relatively resistant or confident in what my body can do and the lengths and the limits to which I can take it to not have a problem. And I'll give you an example. 2 years ago, I was on a motorcycle trip with my buddies and I had a wreck and I concussed, and it was in the middle of absolutely nowhere, in the middle of Washington. And I reminisce back on that trip because of how fun it was. And a lot of it had to do with the incredible stakes that were involved in the trip itself, that was a lot of fun for me. And I was bringing it up to these guys a couple of nights ago that I want to do a trip just like that again. I don't want to do, we did a multi-state trip that lasted 5 days last summer. I didn't find it nearly as exciting as the one where we were in a relative, like in a 600 mile zone, but we were doing a lot more dangerous type stuff. And they were like, kind of thinking that, Eddie, you got hurt that time, all this kind of stuff. And I just kept telling them, like, guys, the odds of that happening again are not high, and I'm not really worried about it. And if something does happen, I will get better. I'm not worried about it. I'm the only one that got hurt on that trip. So if anybody should be resistant or worried, it should be me. But that's kind of the superhuman, it sounds so stupid to say, but that's like the superhuman attitude that I kind of have now about a lot of things. It's like, what's the worst that could happen? And I remember I was interviewing, where I was with Nicole Sachs. She interviewed me on her show a couple of years ago. And my whole family had, this was still when we didn't really know how bad COVID was. Like, it was still kind of the death sentence is sort of how it was talked about. And my whole family had got it, and I was taking care of all of them. And she was summarizing our interview the week after it aired and was just saying, like, my kind of cavalier attitude to the whole thing was sort of, if I get sick and if I die, or if we die or something happens to all of us, we'll deal with it. But like, whatever happens, happens, and it's going to be okay either way. And that's just kind of how I see a lot of situations now. And so selfishly, like, that's the gain in it for me. I can handle a little bit of sitting there and, you know, experiencing negative thoughts or emotions and going through that, because it is the practice that I do is just very somatic based. And a lot of times it's like 3 minutes of feeling very uncomfortable. But the trade-off is that I will get days and days of feeling very comfortable and very strong and resistant and all that stuff. So like, that's the trade-off. And I think that's a great trade-off. And if you could tell any guy out there that has resistance to understanding or looking deeper into himself, I bet they would take that trade too, but it's hard to get them to buy into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tricky. And I don't know what the answer is to that necessarily. You know, I'm grateful to be alive and conscious, and to be able to do what I'm able to do. You know, I've had people, somebody said to me one time, you know, that the only reason humans ever do anything is because they're trying to distract themselves from their awareness that someday they're going to die. So that's a pretty grim outlook. I mean,
like, the greatest fear of a lot of our sickness, it's a good point, could be fear of death, fear of dying, fear of losing control.
Like, and it's like, yeah, I mean, I guess I've got fear around that. Who wouldn't? But I don't know that, like, my existence is defined by trying to avoid, you know, thinking about or experiencing that fear. It's just like, the way that I look at it is, it's like, I remember when, like, I read the books and I would kind of find like some, like, these little programs that you could follow for getting through TMS, and, like, you know, little daily exercises. And one of them was like, what are all the things that you want to do with your life if you didn't have chronic pain? I just, it's this enormous list of things. And it was great. And it really reminded me, it's like, well, I am fortunate enough to be alive and conscious, and I'm going to experience as much as I can just for the sake of wanting to experience it, because it's great.
I wish there was one across the board reason, like, you know, Fred Amir was on my show 2 weeks ago, and his big thing is you got to have a goal. You got to be driven. You want to be motivated. What he wanted to lift his 4-year-old daughter.
Like, yeah, was, that's like, a huge
one. It was his goal. Another scientist friend of mine did its research of 100 people that healed chronic pain and autoimmune disease. And what did she find common denominator from all these people that healed? She found that they made a decision. I'm going to heal. That's law of attraction. That's chemical.
Yeah, that is. I think that decision point is crucial. Also want to call out something that Lena mentioned in the chat. I think that we often forget talking about is that it is possible to heal without diving into every trauma ever lived or putting every single personality trait on it. Yes. It's like you don't
a lot
have
of people
to, like,
don't have to go.
Pick everything
to go
up
through.
And relive yeah. it and go through all of it. It's just like at some point you say it's like, okay. And that's really key, because honestly, I think, you know, to build on what Lena's sort of suggesting here is that if you get caught up in like sort of trying to resolve or relive or unearth every last trauma that you've ever experienced, well, that's just another way of avoiding real life, right?
That makes me think one of the best, I put it in the top two probably of TMS books, is a really understated one that I don't ever hear anybody talking about, but it's just, it's the one by Adam Heller, Zero Pain Now. Yeah. The reason I think it's so great is that it's so simple. And it says in the book, if you have questions, send an email here, you know, it's like adam@adamheller.com. And he would have, I think he has, or at least had, this is in 2017, has a team of people that are just answering these emails. But I had sent them a message and I was like, because it would say, send me whatever your writing prompt was to this address, like basically to check in every day. So mm-hmm. I would check in and, you know, the writing prompt was, what emotion are you feeling? And you're supposed to give, you know, 10 minutes talking about that. I would be given the prompt, what emotion are you feeling? Then I would type in and it would always be this long story about something that happened or something, some memory or whatever. And I would just get this really simple, very frustrating response that would just be like, that's great. What emotion are you feeling? And like just over and over. And we did this for 3 or 4 weeks probably, where I would be like, dude, I just wrote this whole freaking story and all I'm getting is, what emotion are you feeling? But like, that's the beauty of it, that it's so simple. And he would send me this, there was this video that Adam did years and years and years ago, like 10 years ago, where he's giving an example or a metaphor or whatever we call this, of you're driving in a storm or you're driving and it's raining or whatever. And instead of focusing on the road, you're turning on the windshield wipers and you're watching the wipers instead. And like, that's what the distraction of all the messy stuff is, that instead of watching the road and driving on the road, you're instead watching this go back and forth. And it's literally probably the most perfect way that I've seen somebody encapsulate what all of this is like truly a distraction. Perfect.
Yeah. Listen, and some of us have our own journey and how we get there. And, you know, I once had an interview with somebody who healed from a book read and someone who's been healing for years. And it's not to negate. I wanted to support both processes, but it's a personality thing. And even Schribner says some of the main things is what your personality is. So we're back to knowing yourself, understanding yourself, accepting yourself, compassion, honoring the journey, and not judging and just doing the best you can. You know? Yep. But I just wanted to give everybody some voice time here. I really love that when people come and talk with us. So Donna, I haven't talked to you in a while, but maybe Brad or Eddie, you want to read her first comment and just respond to her. To Donna.
Donna's first comment. Or is that I've been involved in a relationship that I know I should be angry about. I can only think about it. I can't feel it. I'm dissociated from it. I think that's what my physical pain is about. Yeah, probably.
and why, and you know, if you're having trouble feeling, you know, Jim Prusak just wrote a report about this topic, and I was just talking about, I'm going to have Mark Loomy on my show in a few weeks, who did a big research project with Super Schubiner about the feelings and about EEAET. They, you know, that's this work that Schubiner does sometimes with getting into, how do you get into your feelings? And the point I'm bringing up is that it's just some of the work that he used in This Might Hurt. It's about getting to your feelings. And there's this label on a condition, and Jim Prozek did an article about a blog. It's a name called You Can't Feel. So they've even labeled that I can't connect to my feelings. It's a name of something phobia and something. And so Donna, the point is, we all have a piece of that. I don't think it's a label you can say you are this, but we have that part of us that we're disconnected, like you said, because we don't have that nor pathway or ease or habit, or just we're there in our feelings. We don't have to go any deeper. And I once looked it up on YouTube. How do you know what you're feeling? You know what the person said? What's going on in your body? Like, what physical feeling is going on? So whatever thing physical you're feeling, that's the feeling. Now, you want to label it, then, like Rose used to teach me to say, so what message is your physical body giving you? And that should bring you to a feeling. And, you know, and disassociation is also a word that we use that hurts ourselves. Like, I'm disassociated. I'm just spaced out. I'm just I don't want to go deep. So I'm disassociating. I just want you to take that, Donna, and know that don't be so hard on yourself.
it's alexithymia. Laura just commented it, but yes. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Thank you. That's it. What do you think about that? Like,
I know it exists, but to me, from what I've read or what I've heard, this came up. I taught, usually every year I teach, it's a single course to this University of Rochester graduate program through Douglas Cafrida, who I think you've probably interviewed before, but yeah. It's his class at the University of Rochester. And this topic came up a couple of years ago. I mean, from what I've seen, it seems to be people that have sort of, they've gone through it. They've been through it, and they just sort of push it away, all the things that have happened in their life. And you just get out of practice. I mean, I think it's one of those kind of things where if you spend 40 years or 50 years never working with emotions, how can you be expected to be able to?
Yeah, it's not easy to overcome. I mean, if you've been told that you're not allowed to feel things and that there's something wrong with you, feel a certain way, like that adds up. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not easily turned around. It's, you know, we got to be real about that. It's tough.
Right.
But and,
oh well, Laura, wow, I haven't seen you in a while. Laura was on my show, and she passed CRPS. She had an accident and got CRPS, and then worked with it, and is really in recovery. Beautiful. And you know, how do you guys feel about this? Because I do want to say to people who are not, you know, getting to where they need to be, it doesn't mean you're not there. I think there is an interesting place, because from what I believe, maybe this, you guys can disagree or agree, is from what I've learned, and I learned so much from Rose, is that we're always going to, our anxiety is our physical pain. Like, if we're in physical pain and we have some anxiety, let me get my thoughts straight. The physical pain leaves, there will be some deep emotions that you will feel.
Yes.
It's going to be one or the other. And so choose whether you want to hang out with your fear, your anger, your sadness, your loneliness. And that should be where the pain should shift. And if it doesn't, it doesn't mean anything's wrong with you. It just means that you're still hypervigilant, and the weakness and the pain is there. And, you know, you can have a relationship with it. I mean, you can learn to dial it down. I was saying that in the beginning of the show. You know, you can learn to dial the pain down and have a different sensation with it. You can, for some people, they ignore it. Schubiner says, you can say to the brain, enough, brain, I get you. You're protecting me. Like, the body's not punishing you, it's protecting you. And I just want to say that to the listeners, you're not a victim of your pain. You are in a relationship with it, and this is your journey.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think that's what it comes down to. And, you know, one thing that also occurs to me is I got past TMS, whatever, 2014, but then it happened again, you know, which is how I found the group originally. And yeah, stuff is going to happen. You're going to feel pain again. It's going to happen. It's okay. Yeah.
You guys are still having,
but being okay with saying it's okay is, right. You know, it's not easily done. Right. And I think that, you know, and I guess ultimately in a lot of ways, one of the best things that this group can offer people is recognition that you're not alone, you know, is that they're, you're not alone. And that's not to say that you're not unique. You are unique. But you know, you're not impurely alone in that sense. That like there are other people who are dealing with things that is uniquely their own, but that is still very similar to what you're dealing with. And the idea here is to get you focused on being alive and reveling in it, as opposed to being afraid of it.
Wow, so it's about courage. It's about courage.
Yeah, I think that there's a courage aspect to it for sure, and it's your journey and your courage, and it's going to be necessarily different than mine, than anybody else's, and that's great.
Mm-hmm. And how do you guys feel about like really loving your body, even though it's not working for you? How can one? I mean, I think that's to me one of the big solutions, because it becomes a chemical reaction that I can love.
Easy to say, difficult to do. Really hard to do. I think that, you know, there's a whole body positivity movement that exists out there that's probably fallen into some toxic positivity where it just winds up being sort of artificial. You know, and that sort of gets us just like, okay, well, what does it mean to like love someone? What does it mean to love something? What does it mean to love yourself? And thinking about what that might mean to you, that's probably going to be very idiosyncratic as well.
Yeah. Did you guys see the movie Did you guys see the movie Love Heals?
No.
I'm going to send it to you. This woman healed. Well, she had two failed spinal surgeries from a calf sprain. And Hanscom was in the movie, Bruce Lipton, Fred Luskin, about forgiving. It was a really beautiful film. I'm going to send you the link. It costs like $15. And it's just a beautiful film. And this woman, Dana, hated herself. And she had some sexual trauma. But the most important thing is she understood through meeting with Bruce Lipton and David Hanscom about the threat safety physiology. And she was living under threat. But more so that she could not look in the mirror and say, I love you. And that love became a chemical reaction. You know, I like the way Hanscom says it, and I repeat it all the time, that love is awareness and awareness is chemical. So we're back again to the awareness, to the mindfulness, to the calmness. And we're back to the, like, it all comes back to the neuroplasticity, to the thoughts. So every little angle I always bring in, I try to bring back and say, and there it goes again. So there's nothing new under the sun. We're not going to come up with anything new. I've been on this show for 4 years. I'm not going to say anything drastically new with anybody. You know, it's basically repetition.
Yeah, we're not going to come up with some new insight. And that's okay. You know, we're not looking for novel here. If we discovered something new, that would be alarming.
Right. And then we're back to the mind body syndrome Facebook page, because people are like, so what can I heal with now? And
that's interesting though. You know, I was thinking about this with my recent like little flare up thing that happened when I was doing my weightlifting. And I was reminded of, you know, whenever you read any of these books, there's sort of a frustrating absence of like, okay, but what do I do? And people always want to know what to do. And I've kind of gone back and forth on this because, like, if you're relatively new to this, you might get the concepts, and then you really kind of need to do, you're going to take some sort of, you're going to do things. You're going to think certain things. And it is handy to sort of have a playbook, if you will, in terms of what you can do. And I think, so I was really diligent about, like, okay, how is it that I'm responding? It's like, well, I have physical pain. It came in conjunction with this thing that I was doing. Just because it correlates with the thing that I was doing, was that really the cause of it? Maybe, probably not. And it's like, let me pay attention to, like, how physically how it's feeling. Well, it's in and out, and sometimes it's, you know, feels worse, sometimes it feels better. I was like, okay, knowing that, it's definitely TMS. Okay, now that I know that it's TMS, how do I talk to myself there? I say, oh, it's TMS. This is not a physical thing. I'm not injured. So because I'm not injured, I don't need to do these other things that I might be inclined to do. I don't need to massage my back. I don't need to take a hot bath. I don't need to do these things because I'm not injured. It's just sort of this process of saying, it's like, I'm not injured. I also need to pay attention to my emotions. And I think that how you go about paying attention to how you're feeling, that's kind of up to you. Just do it. I don't know.
Good point. Really, really good point. any other last, I know you guys, this is your lunch break. I mean, it's nighttime for me, so I want you guys to get back to work. But we had a handful of people listening and lots of wonderful people commenting. I love when you guys come to the live show. I really, really do. So I'm so happy you all commented. Anybody else want to ask a question to Eddie or to Brad? Because they're really pseudo therapists. They're really doctors.
Also not a therapist. Not only not a doctor, not a therapist.
Yeah. I'm Tova, I sell software. That's what I do. I sell software.
Yeah, but you are a father of two girls. You are, first of all, okay, second of all, third of all, you guys have been through on the other end of, and yeah, and you guys are comfortable being in touch with your feelings. This is not, and I'm not judging female, male. I'm a little hardened, you know, I'm a little also hardened good. As for a female, but I'm saying, like, you know, you guys have gone through it and it softened you. It's you can talk about it. You write beautifully. You really both have an incredible ability to express. You're both really very expressive. And I think you can come out and say, my pain taught me this. Like, this is the meaning and purpose of sometimes chronic pain. It made you a different person, a better Eddie and a better Brad, a more expressive. And what do you guys think?
I want to comment on something that Lena just said in the chat. She says that I would argue that you can dial the pain down without ever relating it to anger or root cause, and basically says, I reckon we need to focus more on nervous system and self-regulation. So I have a very recent example of this. Charlie Merrill. Have you ever interviewed Charlie from Merrill
Performance? No, I'm a little intimidated. I don't think he would. I think he'd want to. Yeah,
he's awesome. I don't know. He's awesome.
He's a PT. I see him on LinkedIn. He's a PT, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's a PT.
You talked to him or you interviewed him?
I've interviewed him a couple times. Yeah.
Okay. I'll check him out.
But yeah, he teaches with Schubiner. They do seminars together, all that kind of stuff. And he's very matter of fact, very pragmatic. He's a lot like Jim Prusak. I mean, I see him as the same guy. Me being just somebody on the peripheral, everybody is really saying the same thing. it's just, you know, some people like bicker about what interpretation of this is, right? Even though we all are saying the same thing. Like, I can tell you're all saying the same thing. But I had, this is the beginning of December. I had an Achilles, like a Achilles strain, and, I had messaged him about it, and it had been, basically it happened on I think it was a Saturday night. And Saturday is my rest day. I work out Saturday and Thursday are my rest days. So I went and worked out regularly on Sunday, ran a 5K on Monday, like did all my normal stuff, but because I just treated it as just a TMS thing. And it is what it is. But as the week rolled on, the few days rolled on, like I like did not have the horsepower or the juice on my running or my lifting, like the explosion wasn't quite there. And I talked to him and, he had said, what were you doing when it happened? And I told him, and he's like, it's kind of a, you know, a benign thing. Like, is that irregular for you to do? And I said, no, like, it's quite common. That's why I think this is so stupid. But he had suggested, hey, like, it could be a little strained, but like, if you just treat it as that, like, you don't need to do anything. And once I heard him say that and just kind of got out of my own way, because the thing is, like, you can have acute injuries. He started talking about just the overall, like, tension in your tissues when you are sort of wound up, your nervous system's a little wound up,
wow,
that you can have these acute injuries. However, acute injuries, and Schubiner said this on my podcast as well, like, the majority of soft tissue injuries are going to heal in a few days to a week. And if it's really more than that, like, case closed, if it's not cancer, if it's not a, you know, a fracture, stuff like that, that your detective work is kind of over, is the phrase he kept using. And so once I got out of my own way and stopped saying, hey, this is just a TMS anger thing, it was the holidays, whatever, like, reasonable enough to believe that it's that. But once I was just like, oh, this is an acute injury, my nervous system was wound up, I was a little tight, I got this strain, it is what it is. 5 days later, I was back to just doing all my normal stuff and just not taking it so seriously. So, Lena, thank you for saying that, because that's a story that I would have definitely forgot to tell. Yeah. That can happen too. But again, like, the main thing is just, hey, regardless, injuries heal so fast and the body is such an amazing, like, my daughter, like, Audrey, the one I was just talking about, my little mini me, she fell on the ice last Tova. I don't know what the temperature's like there. Brad and I have been frozen for about 3 weeks here. It's just now okay.
Just but
it
now.
It was 15 degrees 2 weeks ago. Last 2 weeks. Last Tuesday, Audrey fell on ice walking to school across the crosswalk. She had her hands in her pockets because it was so cold. And she landed face first on the concrete, shredded the whole side of her face. Like,
it looked I saw the picture.
She looked like Harvey Two-Face. And yesterday was 7 days. And all the scabbing is gone. Everything is gone. It looks, I mean, amazing how fast the body can heal. And it looked, when her face started swelling and all the blood was all that, like, I was thinking, she's just lost this beautiful face and she's never going to regain it, right? That's what a typical person, I think, would think. But I'm just watching the rapid healing of this injury. And if you can think about the body like that, like, that you have literally just the most, as far as ingenuity goes, we are so far ahead of machines. Like, I watched Terminator 2 when I was wrapping presents on Christmas Eve. The body could do way more than Terminators could do. Like, just
far and away. That's a good way of putting it. want to acknowledge, Lori has a statement. Big family birthday celebration this weekend. I'm stuck on conditioned response, and I know if I don't leave by 4 p.m. before dinner, I will be vomiting pain at the party. Hate being the party pooper. How to deal with this? It's been almost 8 years. I'm frustrated. Well, now we're talking about family stuff. And, you know, I think the first thing is just like, yeah, that's normal. Like, nothing wrong with you for feeling that level of frustration. Without necessarily knowing what's going on with the family, there could be just the fact that, like, maybe you don't feel accepted by them or don't see seen by them. And these are the people who, if anybody is going to see you and accept you, they probably should. And it sounds like maybe they don't. And you might be blaming yourself for that, and it's not your fault. Yeah, that sucks. That royally sucks. Majorly painful.
Hey, but Lori, what I'll say is that the thing that you know based on what you wrote is that when this weekend is over, it's over. It's all gravy. So as long as you know, like, and that's the thing, like, Point Break is one of my favorite movies, and the level of, it's a movie about surfing, and those guys and their just fearlessness around going up to the most dangerous waves in the world, because the only way to go and do the things you want to do is just to go through it. This is the same thing that, like, if you have something to look forward to in a week or 2 weeks or whatever, you got to get through this weekend, and you're going to you're not going to die this weekend. So, like, that's the sort of nonchalant, I'm sorry, that sounds not empathetic at all, Lori, but that's sort of what you kind of have to like, you know, it's coming. And if you know it's coming. Yeah. Right. Not connected. Yeah, no. So Lori's like saying, hey, my family's wonderful. I talk to Brad about this every holiday. my family is wonderful. They drive me nuts because everybody gets together and talks about all their health problems. And when you stack, Thanksgiving and family parties and Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, the day after Christmas, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, That is like a, that is a gauntlet of everyone talking about their pain. And usually by the end of it, I've got sciatica or I've got something. It just happens. But I know that by January 2nd or 3rd, it's all those symptoms are gone and I'm good.
Yeah. Now, Lori did point out, she says, my family is wonderful. It's not connected to them at all.
Yeah. And also can we have a little bit of a party around living in the moment? I mean, how many of us live in yesterday and tomorrow? And that's why we're disassociated and we all do it, you know,
anticipating, we all do it all the time.
And, you know, like just like in the moment you are, first of all, you're much healthier and stronger when you're breathing and you're in the moment, you have no pain. I mean, like breath and then presence. I mean, this is science. We have no pain. And if, you know, like we're living in, and that's because the fear of pain cycle. That's the, you know, but you said something, Brad, about, I mean, Brad, about responding. So Lori, respond to everything that happens and your brain and nervous system will be calm. Plus acceptance. We're back again to acceptance. We're back again to, you're doing the best you can. And, you know, the anticipation is like the fear is worse than, you know, and also the visualization. I love this. It's another great tool. Lori, visualize that everything will be okay. Visualize that you'll do the best you can. Visualize that you'll have a burp that you won't throw up. You know, just visualize. And, you know, what do they say about the conscious? If we visualize, then our conscious mind doesn't realize we're visualizing. Like if we visualize that everything will be okay, the conscious mind will believe that everything is okay. Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's something to that. Yeah, it's just, it takes practice and repetition. So you just have to do the same basic things over and over.
You know, if we, our ego sometimes gets us, trips us up because we want to be perfect, we want to be good, but your ego can also be like, you're doing the best you can. Okay, go girl, you did it. You're all right. Like that's also your ego. To be your own cheerleader.
Yeah. That was all of that. All right.
I think we covered everything from A to Z.
We got a lot of it in there.
I don't always get 15 people hanging out in my studio, but that's how many people. I'm telling you guys are a real draw. Do you think you'd come back in a few months and come again? Because you draw a lot of people to my studio and then I'm happy. And when I'm happy, then, you know, a lot of things happen.
I'd be game for doing it again.
Yeah, for sure.
It's an important topic. And if you got, you know, like, I'd love to also, I don't think I want to get into it with you guys, but like to help you run the page. I don't think you need to do that. I think it's running itself. Tons of people join it. I mean, like there are new people every day, right, Eddie? Like,
oh yeah. Yeah. There's probably, it seems like there's 10 or 15 and every 4 to 5 days I get around to doing approvals, but, and I'll, for every 15 people that join, probably 11 get admitted because there's plenty of people that they skip the questions or they don't think they need to answer them or they just give whatever responses. I mean, don't want to let anybody in because it is just noise. If somebody's in there, I mean, it's mostly a good group. Not, you know, 95% of people are just fine.
Yeah.
And I think people are getting what they need and they're getting a lot of support. And it's a very unique page. There's nothing like it. And so, you know, all the honor to you guys and thank you for your time and just the best to all of you and stay warm, be well, and we'll meet again.
We'll meet again. This is great. Thank you for setting this up. I'm so glad to have done it.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
Bye,
dears.